Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Ministerial Exception Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 11, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Hosanna-Tabor Evangelical Lutheran Church and School, VEEOC. This case presents the question whether the ministerial exception to federal employment discrimination statutes, an exception that generally shields religious organizations from claims of unlawful discrimination by employees who perform religious functions, applies to a teacher in a religious elementary school who alleged that the termination of her employment violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. The lower appellate court concluded that the teacher did not qualify as a minister and that the exception therefore provided no defense against the teacher's lawsuit. In an opinion delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the Supreme Court reversed, holding unanimously that the teacher did qualify as a minister and that the ministerial exception barred her suit challenging the court's decision to terminate her employment. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion. Justice Alito also filed a concurring opinion and was joined by Justice Kagan. To discuss the case, we have Michael McConnell, who is a professor at Stanford Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor McConnell.
Hello, this is Michael McConnell talking about big decision for religious freedom in Hosanna-Tabor Evangelical Lutheran Church and School versus EEOC. This was a remarkable decision. It was broad, it was unequivocal, it was unanimous, and it was correct. It's hard to think of another decision in recent times that you can say that about. The question in the case is whether the First Amendment permits the government to apply the non-discrimination laws, in this particular case, the Americans with Disability Act, to a church's decision to hire or fire a minister. The particular case involved a woman named Cheryl Parrish, who is a commissioned minister in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and whose job was teaching in a religious elementary school. Now, every court of appeals to have considered this question had concluded that there must be some kind of a ministerial exemption under the First Amendment, but they were all over the map about how that would be done. And in this particular case, the Sixth Circuit had held that Ms. Parrish is not a minister on the basis of a rather mechanical counting of how many hours she spent in the day on which particular duties. And since a majority of her time was spent on secular matters like teaching children, they concluded that she could not be a minister. The Supreme Court, as I mentioned, reversed in a unanimous opinion by Chief Justice Roberts. Now, this is important on its own terms because the ministerial exception has been under considerable assault, both in the academic literature by various advocacy groups and then most recently by the Obama administration, who took the position in the case that it does not matter that the church is a church, that it has no more constitutional protection for the selection of its ministers than any employer has for the selection of its employees. Now, this is a pretty shocking proposition. It would mean, among other things, that Catholic churches or Orthodox Jewish synagogues would have to have a female clergy, just to mention one particularly clear example that came out during the oral argument. The government had no persuasive grounds for distinguishing that hypothetical, and that was, I think, one of the things that must have influenced the court in its analysis. So the court held, first of all, that there is a ministerial exception, and then that Cheryl Parrish meets it. And finding that there is such an exemption under the First Amendment, the court said, and I quote, "Requiring a church to accept or retain an unwanted minister or punishing a church for failing to do so intrudes upon more than a mere employment decision. Such action interferes with the internal governance of the church, depriving the church of control over the selection of those who will personify its beliefs." The court did not provide a clear definition, or even really any definition at all, of who is a minister, except to make clear that that goes beyond actual ordained clergy and has to be based upon a rather intense factual analysis of the title and function of the person involved. This means that the precise contours of the decision will have to be worked out by the individual courts. But in its analysis of Ms. Parrish's situation, the court was quite skeptical of the Sixth Circuit's limiting constructions, its reasons for finding that she is not a minister, and I think that augurs for a fairly broad interpretation of the exception in the future. So the immediate impact of the decision, I think, is quite positive, but potentially the long-range implications for doctrinal development under the religion clauses of the First Amendment may be even more important. Prior to 1990, in Employment Division versus Smith, the peyote case, this would have been a perfectly straightforward free exercise case. If the ability to hire ministers is not, without governmental second guessing, is not part of the free exercise of religion, it would be hard to think of what possibly could be. In the Smith case, the peyote decision, however, the court held that the free exercise clause does not provide protection against what it called neutral and generally applicable laws. Well, as the court pointed out in Hosanna Tabor, Title VII and the Americans with Disabilities Act are, in fact, neutral and generally applicable laws. That means that if the Smith case were interpreted broadly, as its terms somewhat suggested, that the free exercise clause might not cover the case. And that meant that after the Smith decision, the courts of appeals, all of which recognized the exception, did so on really having to scramble to come up with their doctrinal basis. Well, now the Supreme Court has resolved that, and it held that this exception is based on both the free exercise and the establishment clauses, and their important implications for each. Let's begin with establishment. That the establishment clause, often regarded colloquially as the separation between church and state, has up until this decision invariably been used to strike down statutes which are regarded as favorable to religion, such as giving tax money to a religiously supported ministry or religious school, or having religious symbols on governmental property, or that sort of thing. This is the first decision in which a religious life is actually held to be protected by the Establishment Clause. Now, I regard that as entirely correct, both as a philosophical matter and also as a historical matter. A separation between church and state is a two-way street. It is just as important that the church be protected from the controlling hands of the government as it is that the government be disabled from favoring any particular religion. But this is the first case to dip its toe into the water of that important proposition. My guess is that over the years that will lead to other applications as well. As to the free exercise clause, this case limits the reach of the Smith decision to what it calls physical acts, as opposed to the internal governance decisions of religious organizations. Now, it is not entirely clear what that means. Physical acts is a term unknown to the law. It will require a lot of future litigation to flesh out exactly what that means. My guess is that ultimately this new decision will revive, you know, breathe new life into the free exercise clause with respect to all matters of membership, organization structure, belief, and teaching within the church, but not any overt acts that sort of have a physical or concrete effect upon anyone else, such as a tort, for example, would not be affected by this. But that's to be fleshed out. But the most important thing to note here is that the court is beginning to whittle away from what had been the very broad application of Smith. The final thing to note is that there were two concurrences in the case, one by Justice Thomas and the other by the unlikely duo of Sam Alito and Elena Kagan. Both of them, unlike many concurrences, actually support and go a little bit farther than the majority opinion in slightly different ways. Justice Thomas says that in the definition of minister, that the government should largely defer to what churches declare and believe to be their ministers. And Alito and Kagan warn against narrowly interpreting the ministerial exception to apply only to ordained clergy, but to extend it to all those who have significant religious functions within the church. One final note, which is of some interest, is that the court had quite harsh things to say about the position taken by the Justice Department, describing their position as extreme and rejecting it outright, saying that the government, again, had contended that there could be no special treatment of religious organizations. And the way the court put it is that it falls under the EEOC's view that the First Amendment analysis should be the same whether the association in question is a Lutheran church, a labor union, or a social club. That result is hard to square with the text of the First Amendment itself, which gives special solicitude to the rights of religious organizations. That position, which they describe as extreme, the court completely rejects unanimously. I think it's interesting that even Justice Elena Kagan, who headed up the Office of the Solicitor General so recently, was willing to join in an opinion with that stinging rebuke of her former office. And I think that augurs well for religious freedom cases in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.